Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and we are talking today, of course, about President's Day. President George Bush always said that he hopes history will be the judge of how his administration will be remembered. Well, historians are starting to weigh in on that very question. Just in time for President's Day, C-SPAN has conducted a ranking of all 42 presidents who have completed their term in office, and George W. enters the list at number 36. Here with us to run down the rankings of our favorite and perhaps not so favorite presidents and what has changed since the same poll was taken in the year 2000 are Edna Medford Green, a professor of history at Howard University, and Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School. Welcome to both of you to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And Julian, I did read some of your comment on a blog at the New York Times, and these Obama-Lincoln comparisons that have been seemingly endless since President Obama was nominated, it does seem to make some sense for Lincoln to be tied to Obama with all of the coincidences, but let's change it up a little bit. Julian, tell us what other president Obama might look to or learn from.
Well, he's been linked to Lincoln. He's been linked to FDR during the Depression and with the New Deal. And he's been linked to John F. Kennedy in terms of the charisma and excitement that both of them seem to generate from younger Americans. And finally, he's also been linked a little to Ronald Reagan in terms of the kind of message he tried to appeal to during the campaign. So he's been connected to four of the presidents who loom very large in modern American history, really from the first days he stepped into the White House.
Well, Edna, when we think about the current president in the context of history, should we be looking at the man or the times? When we look to, say, Johnson or FDR or Lincoln, and then we look at the challenges that Obama will face, is that more significant, or is it about leadership style and individual integrity?
It's about both. I think we can't forget that the man is made, I think, by the times. If there is not that opportunity for crisis management, for instance, then the man might have all kinds of abilities, but those abilities are never expressed. And so I think President Obama has a real opportunity here to be a great leader, provided he has those skills that call for great leadership, because he certainly is in a period that will require that kind of leadership skill.
As was President Bush, and he enters the list in 2009 at 36th out of 42 presidents. He always says that history will be the judge of his administration. So, Edna, do we think we'll see him move up or down the list as time passes?
Well, it depends. It depends upon how well President Obama does in handling some of the issues that he has inherited from President Bush. It also depends upon what happens after President Obama leaves office as well. So we're not looking at these people in a vacuum. They are being ranked according to what other presidents have done before them and since.
And we should be clear that this is a list compiled, or let me ask you, Edna, about it. Why don't you tell us who contributed to the list of presidents and the factors that were to be considered across the board?
Yes, there were 65, we call them presidential scholars, who ranked the presidents. But actually, there are also people who are just students of the presidency. They're not necessarily academics who have studied the presidents in great detail, but people who have followed their administrations as well, interested people who probably have a greater understanding of how these administrations stack up against each other.
Are these the same 65 people who contributed to the rankings back in the year 2000?
Some of them are included, but there were new people as well. And we made every effort this time to try to be as diverse as we possibly could be in terms of race, in terms of gender, in terms of political attitudes as well.
And Julian Zelizer, I'm sure you're not surprised to see that Abraham Lincoln tops the list as our greatest president. He so often does. But perhaps historians are just as affected by the myth of Lincoln, as are the rest of us.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things we have seen are our presidential rankings fluctuate. They change dramatically over time. So Harry Truman ends his presidency incredibly unpopular. Republicans gain control of the White House and Congress in 1952. And now, if you look at the list, he ranks relatively high. And then historians and the public and many politicians have taken him on as one of the great presidents. So we are all affected by different factors. I think Lincoln does influence many people, not simply in terms of an evaluation of, you know, he was able to accomplish X and Y and Z, but also there's a certain lore about him at this moment. We are looking for presidents who did well in times of crises. I think that's part of what you see on this list. And Lincoln went through the ultimate crisis in this country and was able to help retain the strength of the Union. So it's natural that many historians or presidential experts would rank him at the top.
And let's talk about Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, of course, the great general. And I notice that Grant is the big chart buster here, Edna, if we can use that, if we can use that phrase. He moves up 10 spaces.
Yes,
now, what has changed since the year 2000 related to Grant, who goes back a century, 150 years?
Well, in recent years, there's been a greater emphasis on his presidency. And also, I think, you know, Grant was pulled down to some extent because of the scandals of his era. And I think if we look at his administration in the context of some of these that are more recent, perhaps he looks better in that regard. But also, I think Grant is sort of riding on Lincoln's coattails. You know, we're in the middle of the bicentennial of Lincoln's birth. There's a lot of press around the people that Lincoln surrounded himself with. And I think Grant automatically is elevated as a consequence of that.
So a new meaning to the phrase coattails.
I think so.
All right. We want to offer our listeners to call in on our President's Day conversation. We'd love your input. Give us your top three underrated or overrated presidents. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Again, give us your top three overrated or underrated presidents. And Julian Zelizer, I find that everyone's a presidential scholar. Everyone has their favorites and those who they feel have been underrated or overrated. But let me ask you this, a related question, Julian. Do our favorite presidents match up with the most effective presidents? Do certain people get overly romanticized and others overlooked, even though they may have done great things for the country?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for example, John F. Kennedy is one of the presidents who usually does pretty well, at least in the last few years, in these rankings, for obvious reasons. But if you're looking at, you know, the production of legislation, how a president changes, you know, domestic policy, his record was rather thin. JFK, when he was assassinated, had not fulfilled most of his big hopes, from a tax cut for most Americans to medical care for the aged. None of this had gotten through Congress. And at the time, he had some big successes, like the Cuban Missile Crisis and how he handled it. But in general, this was not someone with a remarkable record. So there, I think the ranking does not necessarily match the efficiency as president. Another example would be Lyndon Johnson. In a different way, you know, there are many people who don't consider Lyndon Johnson's presidency very good, not because he didn't accomplish a lot, which he did, but he was responsible for one of the greatest foreign policy disasters the country has had, Vietnam. And yet, on this list, he is 11, if I'm looking at it correctly. And that's pretty high for someone responsible for that war. So I think there's often a disconnect in how we rank them and how we might evaluate them, you know, through some other look at their actual record.
And you are correct, Lyndon Johnson comes in at number 11. And Edna, let me ask you a related question. Does the current historical climate, and I think you've suggested this much in your previous answer, change how we remember our past presidents? And specifically, I want to ask you about FDR and Ronald Reagan. Do you think the current recession will make us nostalgic for FDR or for Reagan?
There's no question about that. I think these people, the rankings occur based on where we are today. And we also, you know, there were 10 different areas that we ranked these people on. If I have the time to go through it very quickly, public persuasion, crisis leadership, economic management, moral authority, international relations, administrative skills, relations with Congress, vision or setting an agenda, pursued equal justice for all, or performance within the context of one's times. I think that what we do when we look at these rankings is we choose something that we like about the person or dislike about the person, and it spills over into these other areas. And our likes or dislikes are very much based on where we are today.
It is fascinating. I read last week that 14,000 biographies have been written of Lincoln, and I imagine that kind of spin over the course of a century can only help you make that number one in the rankings. We do have some calls. We have Mark, who is in Jackson, New Jersey. Love Jackson. Mark, why don't you give a shout out to your top three and tell us why your number one is your number one.
Well, my number one would be Polk, President Polk, who established the border between Canada and the United States by threatening to go to war with England. Mm-hmm. He also pushed us westward, and he also went to war with Mexico. He was a great president. And then the second one would be Thomas Jefferson, of course, very popular one. But he is the founder of the Constitution. He was a landowner, believed in landowners' rights, believed in smaller government, and he was instrumental in a lot of the political parties that are established today. And then, of course, John Quincy Adams, who was the second president of the United States. He was a wonderful president, came in after Washington. So those are my top three.
Those are terrific, and three that we don't always hear about. Jefferson, of course, one of our founders. We learn a lot about him in that context. But Polk and John Quincy Adams, they are 19, John Quincy Adams on the list. James Polk at number 12, which I would say is surprising, and Thomas Jefferson at 7. My name is Jamie Floyd. I'm in for Brian Lehrer. My guests are Edna Medford Green and Julian Zelizer. And Julian, let me ask you about Mark's rankings and the mention of Thomas Jefferson, because, of course, the Sally Hemings matter has served to perhaps change the legacy of Jefferson to some extent. But I would imagine historians say we have to understand a president in the context of his times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one other thing I'd add to the conversation is we do discover things about presidents that might influence how we think about them. And so the Jefferson-Hemings affair was, you know, widely reported. It was something I think many Americans who don't follow presidents would read about. In general, historians, you know, don't try to allow that kind of factor to influence how they write about a president's legacy for the nation. I mean, it does tell us a lot about kind of the slave culture at the time and interracial relationships, and it is a very, I think, significant fact given his history and his policies. But I think, you know, where we see him on the rankings has more to do with the other factors that the caller mentioned, and Jefferson, like Lincoln, like Kennedy, has a certain lure about him. You know, it's kind of at least the perception he was small government at the early part of this country, something that's been lost, almost a nostalgia for a Jeffersonian America that I think many Americans have that, you know, might seem even more important when we're going through horrible moments of crisis like this.
All right.
May I add, though, but at the same time, you know, while historians are willing to compartmentalize Jefferson's life from the statesman to the private individual, there has been difficulty over the years with Clinton and the Lewinsky scandal. So I think maybe it's because it is so fresh in our memory. And if we look at the rankings from 2000 to now, he has improved in that issue of moral authority. So apparently people are becoming less focused on the Lewinsky affair than on other aspects of his presidency.
Recency may be a factor, and as you say, mm-hmm. the current context as well as the historical context. Let's take a call from Chuck in Wilmington, Delaware. Chuck, welcome to WNYC.
I listen every day, and I enjoy this one of the most intelligent programs in the country.
Thank you.
I'd like to launch a preemptive strike on behalf of John Kennedy, who is ranked sixth in this survey, which will cause some jaws to drop because people will say, hey, he was the president for 1,000 days. It may have been fair, and he may have been underrated in this. Not that any of the people ahead of him, the big three plus TR and Truman, weren't absolutely great and probably Hall of Famers ahead of him. But this survey docked him points on moral authority, I guess, based on the kiss and tell stuff that came out 10, 20, 30 years after he died. It had absolutely no effect on his leadership of the country. And the survey, if you look, and C-SPAN did a wonderful job on this. His international relations, he was basically given a B-. He's ranked somewhere in the middle of the pack. And this is the guy who averted the nearest thing to a nuclear war we've ever had in the history of the planet. He's ranked way behind Nixon, Nuff said, and Reagan, who Reagan accomplished some things late in his term, but you know, there were some serious things, proxy wars, arms for hostages, Lebanon, all those sorts of things. Not to run down Reagan, who has his own record of accomplishment, but Kennedy comes in there at 6. It's going to cause some people to be shocked, but he's as if Doc Gooden had been killed in a plane crash after his second year. I mean, he had a mercurial, incredible run, and there's been a lot of revisionism since he died. The entire culture changed, mistrust of authority, presidents that making some serious deceptions in fundamental ways. But there are reasons why he was enormously popular during his 3 years in office and has remained so since.
Yeah, and you mentioned, of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis, which many younger folks seem to have forgotten, but anyone who lived through it can tell you what an important moment that was in history. Edna, do you want to respond to that? I like that he referred to it as a preemptive strike, Chuck did, in favor of JFK at number 6, though I do suspect he's right. Many people would be surprised, as Julian Zelizer suggested earlier, to see him so high up given his very short term in office.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind that Kennedy has moved up 2 points because in 2000 he was at 8, and now he's at 6. So people are beginning to look more favorably on his presidency, despite the fact that we have additional information that we may not have had in 2000. Keep in mind that this is not a scientific survey. This is a survey of 65 scholars, for the most part, who bring their own baggage to the study of history. You know, we think that we are all objective, but we really aren't. We're human beings.
Oh, say no,
Edna.
Say no.
We bring certain baggage to the study of these people, and so we need to keep that in mind.
Fair.
And, of course, you know, 10 years from now, these guys will have changed again.
Fair enough, and I do think assessing a living president is very different from assessing those who are recently gone from us or long gone. Let's take, speaking of living presidents, let's take a call from Arturo here in Manhattan. I think, Arturo, your question relates to Jimmy Carter.
Yes, by the way, considering Jimmy Carter's strong policy on human rights, and that policy offended a large part of the academic community, would he get a fair, adequate rating, considering he is looked poorly upon by intellectuals?
How about it, Edna? I think Jimmy Carter dropped a bit on the list. Am I correct?
Yes, he
did. Now at 25. How would you account for that? He's been such a statesman in his post-presidential years.
He dropped by 3 points, and I don't think that's statistically significant, actually. But I think he's dropped because he has made certain statements recently that have offended people when he's dealt with the Palestinian issue. Mm. And I think he's seen as a little bit more vocal than has been the standard for most past presidents. He has been a bit more willing to criticize the incumbent president, and that has offended some people. But at the same time, people are very much impressed by his humanitarian efforts, and I think that has kept him at the level that he is. He might have dropped even further if not for that.
And we do have John Quincy Adams, of course, was not the second president. John Adams was the second president. John Quincy was. There is a very big difference. And, of course, John Quincy was his son.
Right.
And then Charles Francis Adams was a contemporary of President Lincoln. and was quite influential in that era as a friend to some of Lincoln's foes. So that family certainly from the founding, and I always like to mention Abigail because she can you imagine what she would have been had she been in the White House? So what a contribution the Adams have made to our historical legacy. Let me come back over to you, Julian Zelizer, because we do like to talk very much about those presidents we remember in our political formative period. Mine, of course, is Richard Nixon, because my earliest political memory are those Watergate hearings. I begged my parents to let me stay home so that I could watch them, which demonstrated that I would later grow up to be the geek that I have become. But then I'm surprised to see Richard Nixon at 27. Now, of course, as Edna suggests, you know, this is a list, and we do it in fun in part. But are you surprised at Nixon's reinvention, if you will, in his later years and since his death?
Not at all, and it kind of ties into the Carter comment. I mean, one of the fascinating things about Jimmy Carter is that after he ends terribly unpopular, and after his presidency, he remakes himself through his international work, through his foundation, and I think his writings would be lower if it wasn't for his post-presidency. And now I think some of his comments in recent years have hurt him. But Nixon was the same. You know, Nixon ends in the most unpopular fashion you could imagine, literally resigning from office. But after that time, he spends many years speaking about foreign policy, advising presidents, writing in the public eye, and kind of tapping into the reputation he had built in the 60s before running in 1968 as one of the leading authorities on foreign policy. And that combined with a second factor, there's been a lot of new discoveries on Nixon about non-Watergate issues that have been written about by historians, his work on energy policy, environmental policy, or his work with detente with the Soviet Union and China. And kind of things we didn't think about in the 70s have now been front and center in books about Nixon. So I think all of that helped rehabilitate him, both what he did and what historians started to be interested in. But he'll never escape Watergate. You know, you can rehabilitate a president so much. It's like Hoover will never escape the Great Depression.
And I gather from this list and from our conversation, and I'll get a closing thought from each of you, that a president may be a great man as a man, but not necessarily as president. And of course, John Adams comes to mind. We think of him as one of the great Americans and certainly one of our founders, perhaps the most influential. But his presidency, well, it was challenged, to say the least. And there's no way to know which of those Barack Obama will be, but that is an important lesson. Carter, of course, another example. Thoughts on that as we close? Julian?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the end, a person can be great and be a terrible leader and enact terrible policies, and that will weigh down how we think about that person in history. So there might be a lot of love for Barack Obama, a lot of popularity, but in the end, if he can't accomplish important things for this nation, that part of his record, I think, will be something we just don't forget. You know, there's many people who like George Bush, there are, but who don't like the policies that he passed, and I think that's much stronger in most people's minds than whether, you know, he was someone you'd like to have a beer with.
All right, and Edna, my last question to you would be, should we teach our children and ourselves about our presidents as full people, including their foibles? We talked about Jefferson, of course, and Clinton, even Lincoln, if you study him carefully, or should we think of them in history with more mythology attached?
We have to look at these people holistically because they are the leaders they are because of the men they are. You cannot separate the two. There may be foibles there, and there may be some positive things there, but we have to see them holistically. Otherwise, we cannot understand the times that they're living in or how they're responding to those times.
All right. Well, two terrific guests for a fascinating President's Day conversation. I do want to let our listeners know that they can post their top three presidents at our website, WNYC. All you have to do is click on the Brian Lehrer Show. We're still interested in hearing those. Thank you to my guests, Edna Medford Green, professor of history at Howard University, and Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School. And coming up next, we're going to take a turn to Fizzy Lizzy. That's right, soda, and whether or not it should be taxed. That's coming up next. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer.